a Bible reading, a good harvest, traditional harvest reading in many respects, is from Mark chapter 4, Mark 4, starting at verse 1. Again he began to teach them beside the sea, and a very large crowd gathered about him, so that he got into a boat and sat in it on the sea, and the whole crowd was beside the sea on the land. And he was teaching them many things in parables. And in his teaching he said to them, "Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Other seed fell on rocky ground, where it did not have much soil, and immediately it sprang up, since it had no depth of soil. And then the sun rose, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. And other seeds fell into good soil and produced grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And he said, "He who has ears, let him hear." And when he was alone, those around him with the 12 asked him about the parables. And he said to them, "To you has been given the secret of the kingdom of God, but for those outside everything is in parables, so that they may indeed see but not perceive, and may indeed hear but not understand, lest they should turn and be forgiven." And he said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? How then will you understand all the parables? The sower sows the word, and these are the ones along the path where the word is sown. When they hear, Satan immediately comes and takes away the word that is sown in them. And these are the ones sown on rocky ground, the ones who, when they hear the word, immediately receive it with joy, and they have no root in themselves, but endure for a while. Then, when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately they fall away. And others are the ones sown among thorns. There are those who hear the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desire for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. But those who were sown on the good soil are the ones who hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold." Well, harvest is a traditional service some churches do. We've done one at CPC for, well, certainly longer than I've been here. And traditionally, I suppose it's a time of thanksgiving to God that he's given us enough to live on. Farmers, fishermen and others producing food for us. And nowadays, I guess it's a lot more complex. Import, export, preserving food, and we go to the supermarket. But nonetheless, God has provided for us. We don't tend to feel we're on the edge as we perhaps once did, and as some people around the world do. But we give thanks to God for what we have and for those who produce it for us. But also, in thanks, we offer something to those who have less than us. So the appeal this year has been a church in Portugal that I mentioned. Money's a lot tighter there, goes a bit further. We can help them with their gospel work. And of course, in Pamoja in Kenya, even more so, many more times so. And it's great to be able to help them. And it's striking that in the Bible, harvest is quite a theme. In the something I've just cottoned on to a bit late to the party, as ever. The Old Testament, the religious festivals follow a seasonal farming cycle. Often farming and harvest are themes that tell us spiritual truths. God made the world, he made it to work a certain way, and it reflects how he works. Now, it's different to other religions, and a Christian leader recently put their foot in getting this a bit, at best, unclear. So there's a distinction. God is distinct from creation. But he created the world so that we would know what he is like. And parables often have wheat, seed, a farmer, a fig tree, sheep, and so on, so that we understand. And here, a very famous, perhaps the most famous of parables, the parable of the sower, or perhaps better, the parable of the soils. And it follows as far as well what we've been doing the last few weeks, thinking about God's word. I think it's a very searching parable. Whoever you are, whoever might be stumbling across on Periscope or Facebook, listen up for a bit longer. Whatever stage you're at with God, if you're churchy, agnostic, thinking about it, whatever, it's about listening to and responding to Jesus. And it's useful, I think, for a church, any church, about their expectations. Sometimes our expectations are too low. We have underestimated the power of God's word. Sometimes it's too high. We overestimate ourselves and other people. So this is challenging to the individual. Which soul best describes you? Are you listening? Really? And I think the reading, don't know if you notice, as I read it, it sort of naturally divides into three. There's the parable, no explanation. And then there's why parables at all. And then there's the explanation. And I want to start with that bit in the middle, just briefly. Why parables at all? And then I'll take the parable and the explanation together. I don't need to explain it to you, because Jesus explains it. And it is quite simple. I just need to point it out and maybe apply it, maybe drive it home, as we thought last week. So why the parables? In verses 10 to 13, it's a good question. The 12 and those with them ask that in verse 10. And Jesus says in verse 11 that the secrets of the kingdom, or the secret of the kingdom, has been given to you. And then he quotes from Isaiah 6 in verse 13, and he asks them, do you not understand this parable? In which case, what parables will you understand? And it sounds like Jesus is obscuring himself and making it harder, especially that Isaiah quote. It says, doesn't it, that they may see, not perceive, hear, but not understand. Otherwise, they would turn and be forgiven. It sounds like he's making it harder. Now, that Isaiah quote comes from a time when God was sending prophets to Isaiah, to Israel, sorry, like Isaiah, and people were by and large, on a massive scale, rejecting what God had to say. And he said, okay, well, the message will be, eventually, a foreign army will come speaking a language you don't understand. And so it seems here that parables, and the rest of Mark 4 is about parables. Parables are not hard to understand, and they illustrate a spiritual truth, and at the same time obscure. And so to the 12 and those around them, Jesus says, you are on the inside. Those on the inside get it. But there are others, as the 12 and others here do, who don't quite get it, but they ask to get it. They want to come in on the inside. They ask and have it revealed to them. And so the parable draws you in or puts you off and you walk away. And Jesus in the Gospels is like that. And the Gospels are like that. And the Bible is like that. Sometimes you get it, that those on the inside. Sometimes, I need to, that. Can you explain that to me? And sometimes it's hidden, I'm going to walk away. And that helps us as a church with what happens. in our experience as Christians and in the church especially, that people are drawn in and put off. But it's important to see that that is by design, not accident. And to us as individuals, whatever happens when you hear, are you drawn in or do you walk away? And this specific parable, the rest of the chapter unpacks this with parables, but this one in particular focuses on what's going on in our hearts. The different types of souls, and which soul are you? Let's go through each one and just think as I go through, which one of these soils best describes you? We'll think a bit about how we reflect on this as a church as well as we go. So the first is the path. Verse 4. The seed goes on the path and the birds take it away. So there's no plant. Explanation, verse 15, is that Satan takes it away. So here people hear the word, but nothing happens. It's taken from them. So hearing happens, but not listening. Physically, you know what hearing is, you know, the vibrations go through into the ear. They understand the vocabulary, the words and the grammar. But there's been no meaning to them, no impact at all. And no doubt we have seen that. But what about you? I guess by the fact that you are listening, perhaps that doesn't apply. You would have clicked off by now. But perhaps it is you, that you have not even considered this, that you haven't weighed this up. Well, we'll come back to that later. But then there's the rocky ground. Verses 5 to 6, there doesn't look like there's much soil. The soil looks okay, but there isn't much soil. It's shallow because of the rocks. And so the plant takes up quite quickly. It shoots up, but there's no root. And so the sun comes out, it scorches, and it dies. Explanation in verses 16 to 17. They hear the word and they have a positive and quick response. It looks good, but trouble and persecution come and they fall away. As fast as they start, they finish. And so there's some warnings here. Beware of fast-growing fruit. People make quick, positive responses to Jesus, but they don't always last when that happens. So don't be discouraged if you see people fall away who are like that. And have reserved encouragement when people do respond quickly. As Christians, we're not immune. And if you're thinking about all this, being a Christian does not make you immune from the same problems that everybody else has in life. Problems don't swerve and miss us. We're not immune from the problems in the economy and COVID and other illnesses that are out there, depression. But also there are problems that are specific to Christians. Much of the world today is still under persecution, horribly. And here that's not really such a problem, but maybe there are some things that are not as pleasant because we're Christians. We've or a missed opportunity. Choices we make because they seem right from the point of view of our faith. But they can make life harder. Well, how about you? Have you made a positive response, but you have no root, so you're not ready for difficulty, whatever shape that comes in? Or perhaps you have had difficulty and you've given up or in the process. The sun scorched, but there is no root. We need to put down roots so we can drink up for when it's hard and cope with troubles that are thrown at us to be ready. Then there's the seed among the thorns. Verse 7, the thorns choke the plant. And sometimes to death, or sometimes so that it's not bears no fruit. So verses 18 to 19, the response is it's a positive response, but then the faith is choked. And perhaps that's a surprise here, or we need reminding of the surprise here. So far we've seen the problem is Satan, persecution and trouble. They take the word away or kill it off. Here it is comfort. I'll read verse 19 again. To you, verse 19, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. Now that's striking, isn't it? Comfort and nice things, desires. They are as spiritually dangerous as Satan and persecution. I would rather not have persecution, thank you. But my desire for a quiet life is as dangerous to me as persecution. Again, there seems to be a plant, a good response, but then it's gone, or there's a plant with no fruit. There's a pointless plant. And what kind of comfort and desires are we talking about? Well, it's the opposite to the last one. So the last one was something bad coming in. This is something good coming in. It could be a job or a promotion. But you can't talk about awkward things. Be careful what you post on Facebook. Don't share your church services or do anything like that. If you want to keep this job. The job's going to take you away from home quite a lot, and you won't be able to go to church and such like. Various things that we like to do or to have. Sadly, many, many times over the last 30 years or so, the biggest one to pull people away has been a relationship. Parents often pull people away because they pull their kids away from church and from Christian friends for music and sport. But it's just for the season. But the slide starts. And there's many other things as well. Jesus keeps it pretty open. And things, he says. And it's tricky because nearly all of those things are not wrong in and of themselves. But the desire for these things can choke. They become higher than our desire for Christ and to be with him, gathered with his people. And especially right now, I think we're in particular danger at the moment. Not of getting the knock on the door and having your head covered with a bag and put in a van. Some people in the world have that. But doing services like this, and we're out of our normal habits. I'm out of my normal habits. It's odd booking in because spaces are limited. This week there was exactly the number of people booked as we have spaces for, and some weeks it's fewer. Occasionally it's a bit more. When we eventually start morning services, it'll be the same because we can spread people across too, but it'll be the same. Or we're tuning in, clicking on a link to watch a service. Maybe it's just easier to stay at home in your pyjamas with a cocoa and just click. Or maybe just catch up later. Or maybe not. It's all very comfortable, especially as the weather turns. Well, if church is slightly uncomfortable, and at the moment it is, in some respects, it's not normal, feels weird, that actually isn't a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that we've had to put ourselves out for it. Comfort is great. I like comfort. But it can be a great spiritual enemy. So expect people to fall away because they don't want to miss out because the circus has come to town or a relationship or whatever. Well, what about you? Can you see yourself here? Could you, or have you, fallen away? Or not necessarily fallen away, but you've become just a plant, unfruitful, because your spiritual life has been choked by comfort and the desire for something else. And that's the difficult thing, isn't it? Some of these things, in the right context, are not necessarily bad, but you've allowed them to choke out your spiritual effectiveness and fruitfulness. You desire some things over Christ. Now, is in eternity, will it be worth it? Would it be worth looking back on being unfruitful or missing out on it entirely because it choked you? Now, the last kind is the good soil. Verse 8, some goes on good soil, and the return is 30, 60, or 100 times what was sown. And I'm told, often we have had students from Rittle doing agriculture and such like, and I'm told by even by genetically modified standards, these are outlandishly high. Even the 30 is outlandishly high. 100 times? It seems unrealistic. And the explanation, verse 20, well, it speaks for itself. Those that were sown on the good soil are the ones who hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. Simple enough. Bear fruit over and beyond what seems realistic. The fruit doesn't have, we don't have to be specific about. People think, oh, it's about evangelism, it's about faith multiplying amongst other people, fruit of the Spirit. I don't think it matters. The point is it takes root and bears an impact on you. It makes a change. They actually hear, not just a physical act, not an exercise in grammar, but the word goes into the heart and brings about change, ongoing change, and the roots go down. Now, again, the church should expect that, perhaps where we expect, at least expect it to happen. Again, are you? Has the word entered you and put the fruit, its roots down and starting to produce fruit? Not just you've understood the concept, some concepts in the Bible are easier than others, but the roots are down and you're beginning to fruit. Now remember, the point of this parable is drawn in or walk away. How you respond says something about where you are right now. Notice there were four soils. Three had bad outcomes, one had a good outcome. One has instant failure. Two start looking good, but they don't last, or they're made unfruitful. And that explains the disappointment we experience in church, doesn't it? And it begs, which are you? But the final soil, although it's only a quarter of the soils in the parable, is the return is disproportionate. And the following paragraphs, following parables, they talk about the apparent smallness of the kingdom. And the word, which we've been thinking about the last few weeks, the word looks weak. And the response, the kingdom, the church, it is weak and it's small. And yet it's powerful and grows until that's all there is. A phrase that's trotted out, normally in a particular circumstance, but a phrase that's trotted out frequently at the moment is to be on the wrong side of history. And the church looks like it's on the wrong side of history. The church normally looks as if it's losing and on its way out. But here's the thing, it has done for 2,000 years and it's still here. And on the final day, nothing else will be here but what God has established. It looks so weak to start with. Get on the right side of eternity. Notice as well, it's the same sower and the same seed on each soil. The difference is the soil. Now, often we look, as churches, we look at people's response. And the first thing we do, we don't get the response we want and things don't go so well, is we, and actually when things are going well as well, we look at the sower and the seed. Now, okay, are we sowing real seed? Are we sowing from here? Is this our seed? Is our sowing faithful? Beyond that, we get stressed about the technique that our hand is using, so to stretch the parable beyond its perhaps intended purpose. Is the right basket we're using? No, the sower and the seed are constants. The variable is the soil. That's the issue. What is the soil? I think back to now, if any point in my life, pretty much, I think if you asked me, am I a Christian, I would have said yes. But there was a turning point, a particular talk, youth group talk, in when I was about six, well, just after I was 16. Now, as a preacher, looking back, it was an awful talk. The difference, though, but it's there's the right soil, so the right faithful sowing and the right seed. What had changed was the soil. The only variable, the only factor is the soil. Everything else is constant. We keep doing things the same way, but we go through periods with different results. So the parable as well, the thing about parables is they make a specific point. They don't make every point. So this parable that Jesus told is just making a point. It's not an entire theology of the word of God, the entire theology of preaching or responding to God or what it means to be human. So we're not to think, what kind of soil I am? Well, soil is soil. So it's just tough. I'm that soil. That's how it is. That's not the point he's getting at. It's rather, what kind of soil do you look like? It's about responding. What soil would you appear to be at this point? When the word comes to you, what do you do next? Because you can change your soil type. Now, to be pedantic, if people are going to say, well, I'm just this soil type, we have some flower beds at the front here, and they're rocky. They're definitely the rocky path. They look okay until you try and grow anything. We put topsoil over it to grow blueberries. We use Araucasia soil. You can change. Now, sometimes it feels, doesn't it, that we are sowing, and it's landed on the path, and that there's nothing happens. There are times when there's a quick but fleeting response, rather than people clinging to their faith in a trial, you know, something comes that's hard and they just give up. There's the weeds, you know, it looks encouraging, but the cares of the world, just something more interesting comes along and off they go. And it feels our seeds all been put out there, nothing's happened. And other times we do exactly the same thing. Nothing has changed. I've been working in churches for long enough to see that we do the same thing with dramatically different results. And there's sometimes this great joy, not just an initial response, but personal growth you see of people putting their roots down and maturing and bearing much fruit. And yet we're doing the same thing. And I think it's fair to say we're not best placed to judge the soil. I do judge the soil sometimes, and I'm nearly always proved wrong. We just put the seed down. And I guess that's what we do. A bit weird at the moment. How do you do that? Put up a watch party on Facebook, share and such like. Just willy-nilly, indiscriminately put the seed out there. And then, what kind of soul is the only thing that matters? And that is between them and God. We just sow willy-nilly, they respond. This parable, explains the disappointment and the unexpected joys of the Christian life. But it focuses on the individual too. So it's worth reading. Just read over all of Mark 4, and not just that parable. Read over Mark 4 by yourself. And honestly ask, which soil are you? Are you hearing? Are you listening? Are you responding to Jesus Christ? You're not trapped in your current situation. Did you hear his word as a physical act? Or are you listening? And is it taking root? And if you don't feel you're on the inside, but you don't want to walk away, we have some courses that we're doing. We've just finished the Christianity Explored course. We'd love to run another one. We have some other courses as well, one called Identity, one called Life Explored, and we'll run those over by Zoom over the next few weeks and months. And so do contact me through Facebook, through the website, if you want to know more.